the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, do you think that the murder could be considered to be premeditated, Howard? That's what I was wondering about.
3 decades. Oh, my word. Get on with your life already. And what a sad thing, because now he's gone and murdered her, and he will probably do the rest of his life in jail. So she really did, he really did allow her to ruin his life completely.
I think it's amazing how teachers have an influence on us for the rest of our lives. And it's interesting, I'm having some discussions, having reconnected with an old schoolmate, and we still are back in the classroom and talking about events that went down. It's amazing all these years later that we can remember so vividly things that influenced us, mostly, thankfully, on the good side rather than on the negative side. But it's incredible to what extent those people who are school teachers out there just think about how much influence you have over generations of people. Just little unimportant things that happen in the classroom seem somehow to live on forever and ever. And just getting into things that have been going on forever and ever, this is the relationship between Israel and Singapore, which have been in existence since 1965. So a long time, more than almost 60 years now. And yet Singapore has never had a formal embassy in Israel until now. There was a visit earlier this week, in fact yesterday, by the Singaporean foreign minister, who met with Israeli foreign minister Yair Lapid. And Singapore has decided to upgrade its consular service in Israel to a full embassy. Israel, interestingly, has had an embassy in Singapore since 1968, but that wasn't reciprocated by the Singaporeans, I think due to the concern that they have with their Muslim neighbors, in particular Malaysia and Indonesia, who still don't have diplomatic relations with Israel. But I think that Singapore has been emboldened and enabled by the Abraham Accords. It's amazing how the ripple effect just continues to spread out of these Abraham Accords. And now Singapore has decided to open up a full embassy. Interesting that Singapore and Israel have been cooperating already over the years, particularly on defense-related issues and the technology-related issues. And now with a visit by Vivian Balakrishnan from Singapore to Israel earlier this week, yesterday, and also he paid a visit to Ramallah to meet with the representatives from the Palestinian Authority. Apparently, Singapore has decided, in order to try and balance things up, to open a representative office in Ramallah as well. But some agreements signed between Israel and Singapore to cooperate on the development of artificial intelligence in particular. So that's also an interesting little piece of information about Israel's relationship with Singapore.
Yeah, absolutely amazing that. And it is the Abraham Accord. It's almost made it acceptable, and it's given sort of the stamp of approval, which means others can follow.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a country like Singapore, which is a very small country and, of course, almost engulfed by its massive neighbors, major Muslim majority countries who have always had this very, very negative attitude towards Israel, and Singapore has been found it to be more important to maintain local neighborly relations rather than to develop its relations with Israel. By the way, Israel and Singapore have an amazing number of things in common. When you have a look at the development of Singapore, the development of Israel, the way that the economies operate and things like that, it's amazing how similar the two are and how much we have in common. And yet, of course, because of keeping a neighborly peace, they've decided not to go the full hog and to open an embassy in Israel. But now, that's all put aside, and in spite of the fact that Indonesia and Malaysia still haven't come to the party and are unlikely to come to the party, at least in the near future. But, you know, Singapore find that it's okay because of the actions by the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain and other Muslim countries. It's allowed them to be able to do this without the fear of suffering repercussions.
And speaking about repercussions and peace in the region, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett was in Egypt yesterday.
Yeah, so this is a very fascinating meeting that went down in Sharm el-Sheikh yesterday. It was not previously announced that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett would travel to Sharm el-Sheikh to meet with both the Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi and also, quite interestingly, the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi, Mohammed bin Zayed al-Nahyan. And the trilateral meeting that was held in Sharm el-Sheikh obviously comes on the back of a meeting that was held also in Sharm el-Sheikh between Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and the Egyptian president late last year in September. But this trilateral meeting seemed to have a completely different atmosphere and area of business, agenda about it, because as the a formal announcement said, the trilateral meeting was about shared security interests, of which apparently there are quite a few in various aspects, and in particular, the issue of Iran, which is so out there on the agenda, so front and in focus right now. And the issue is that the United States seems to be absolutely determined to re-enter the Iran nuclear program. And Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has been asked about this, and he's been asked why he's not as vocal as former Prime Minister Netanyahu was about the whole Iranian agreement, and in particular the US wishing to rejoin. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's answer was that the US is absolutely determined to re-enter, and effectively he's decided not to pick his battle on that front. He's effectively saying that is almost a lost cause, and therefore being vocal and just simply coming up in conflict with the US on this doesn't serve a purpose. Instead, he said he'd rather reserve his words and take action. That's the way he left
wow.
it.
Wow.
It's That's unclear what all of that means. But in the meeting with the Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi yesterday, they discussed in particular the fact that the agreement will involve, amongst other things, that the US will decide to unlist from the list of terror organizations the Iranian Revolutionary Guard organization, which Israel regards as one of the biggest terror organizations in the world. So as part of the agreement, the US apparently will lift the sanctions that have been imposed on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And as such, both the United Arab Emirates, Abu Dhabi in particular, and Israel regard this as a major threat. Interestingly, the United Arab Emirates has come under attack from Houthi rebels in Yemen, and the Houthis have also been lifted from the list of terror organizations in the U.S. So slowly but surely, the U.S. is kind of freeing up these organizations to continue to sow their seed of terror in the Middle East. The United Arab Emirates, Abu Dhabi, and Israel all consider this to be a major threat. And now the countries of the Middle East are getting together. And in particular, because the United Arab Emirates don't seem to have a particularly good relationship with the United States, and they don't really have a channel of communication. There have been visits to the United Arab Emirates by Antony Blinken that were canceled. And apparently senior officials in the UAE have refused to take calls from the Biden administration. So there really isn't a channel of communication going on between the UAE and the US right now. But the UAE seem to want to use Israel as some sort of a channel to get towards the US. Antony Blinken due to visit Israel later this month. And so obviously there's some sort of a channel of communication which the UAE wish to take advantage of. But there is a lot going on in the background here between Israel and the UAE, Abu Dhabi, Bahrain, other countries in the Middle East, and the Iranian threat, and the actions currently being taken by the US, which are seen to effectively enhance, to make even more the threat that's coming from Iran, because the moment those organizations are lifted from the list of terror organizations in the US, there will obviously be the opportunity to trade and the lifting of sanctions, so money will be able to flow through US banks. There will be a massive implications for Israel and for the United Arab Emirates in terms of the threat that will suddenly increase as a result of these organizations being lifted from the list of terror organizations in the US. And so this apparently was, amongst other things, the subject of discussion yesterday in Sharm el-Sheikh.
Absolutely fascinating. And continuing on these international trips, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has offered to travel to Kiev to continue efforts to bring a ceasefire to the war in Ukraine. Now, this is interesting. Following the talk or following the presentation to Knesset, that wasn't particularly well received.
Yes, so there's so many things going on again on the front of the war in Ukraine. There was a little snippet of information released by a Kremlin-backed site, which apparently was then immediately taken down off the international web. But there was some sort of an acknowledgement that Russia seemed to have lost something like 10,000, almost 10,000 people in this war, with something like 13,000 or 14,000 more people having been injured. So this is, even though it seems to have been put up inadvertently, but it seems to give more credence to the fact that Russia is really suffering. And Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has now said that President Putin, whereas before he demanded regime change in Ukraine, he demanded demilitarization of Ukraine, before he would even be prepared to begin talks about a ceasefire, apparently those demands have now been dropped by the Kremlin, by the Russian authorities, the Russian administration, Vladimir Putin in particular, and that there seems to be a closer coming together of a possible way somehow to find a ceasefire. And in the interests of trying somehow to achieve that, the Prime Minister has offered to travel to Kiev. Now, let's just be clear about what's going on in Kiev. It's not one of the safest places that we know right now. And even though the city of Kiev itself is still very much under Ukrainian control, the Russians have really bombarded Kiev, the capital of Ukraine. In particular, the outskirts of Kiev have seemed to have suffered a lot of damage. A lot of residential areas have been bombed. A lot of damage sustained to all kinds of buildings around, as well as to the central part of Kiev. We heard about the Babi Yar damage that was done and the TV station that was taken out in the central part of Kiev. On the whole, though, my understanding is that the central part of Kiev remains damaged but still standing. So for the Prime Minister to offer to go to visit a place which is really in the center of the war zone and potentially put himself at risk because he could well come under threat, direct threat from the Russians in some sort of an inadvertent attack, in inverted commas. But apparently the Shin Bet have been working to try and find a way to facilitate him going to Kiev to show goodwill, to try and bash heads together, to try and bring an end to this war. And in the interest of doing that, he's prepared to take the chance, take the risk, which I think is a significant one, to go right into the war zone and to somehow not only meet with the Ukrainian authorities, the Ukrainian officials, but potentially also to somehow engineer a meeting between Putin and Zelensky. Zelensky now agreeing that he will meet with Putin if the opportunity arises. He can see that we really need to bring an end to this war. So it's going to be interesting to watch whether Prime Minister Naftali Bennett indeed does visit Kiev or not. A little surprising that this information has been leaked ahead of time. It wouldn't surprise me at all if we wake up one morning and find that he's already returned from a visit without anybody knowing about it. But apparently that seems to be on the agenda right now.
And finally, two Iranian drones shot down over Iraq last month were headed to Israel. That's very scary.
Well, and it's quite consistent now with what we understand about the Iranian modus operandi and the way that they are trying to retaliate against attacks that have been carried out by Israel, not even in recent times, but already going back a number of years. So many of the Iranian nuclear officials have been attacked, have been assassinated, some more senior individuals that we already know about. And so we know that there is a massive score to settle for Iran against Israel. And we understand that there were two Iranian drones that were flying over Iraq somewhere that were actually shot down by US warplanes, which is an interesting cooperation that went on between Israel and the US authorities. Two of these drones, this was in the middle of February, so just over a month ago that these US warplanes shot down these drones. We understand that the wreckage of the drone has been retrieved and that the comment is that they are very much in the form of a Shahed 136 model, which is an Iranian designed drone. We understand that these drones were on their way to Israel to carry out some sort of an attack in Israel. And in fact, Israeli officials have confirmed that these devices were headed towards Israel. This is just one incident out of a number, because we've already discussed other drones that were carrying weapons that were headed towards Gaza that Israel somehow managed to intercept. And it's just coincidental that it was a couple of days later that there was this report about an explosion in Iran, which Tehran, the authorities in Tehran, described as an industrial storage depot. But later they did confirm that this was a drone facility and that they'd initially said that a fire had broken out at this industrial storage depot in the province of Kermanshah, which is in western Iran. But it now turns out that that was really a drone a facility, and that something like 100 Iranian drones, attack drones, wow, were reportedly destroyed in this particular attack. So Israel really having to be on top of things and on its toes in terms of deriving intelligence in order to keep this, what's now turning out to be drone warfare, really at bay, because obviously this could be a very significant threat to Israel.
Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8 o'clock, and we'll catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45.